Chapter 7. Testing Phase. Kairos watched Gahalu stare down at the chessboard. The dark and light squares were fashioned from the woods of the acacia and ebony trees that grew on Dinku Apa. Kairos had made it with his magic, along with two armies of pieces that had once been tide stones and seashells. Gahalu claimed to have seen chess pieces and heard of the game during his travels. But the sort of folk he had sailed with were not the sort to play the game themselves. "I take your knight with my knight," Gahalu said, removing one of the stone figures from the chessboard and replacing it with his own knight. Kairos made a show of studying the board. He had been teaching Gahalu to play, but mostly it was the conversation and a bit of feeling of home that he appreciated. So much of Dinku Apa was strange to him that his favorite game was a welcome reminder of the place to which he longed to return. He had been teaching many of the Dinku how to play, mostly elders and older children. The hunters respected the spirit man, but found his game too slow, its concepts too abstract. None of the Dinku posed any challenge for Kairos, but he enjoyed the leisurely pace and the chance to see his pupils improve and face off against one another. Kairos had seen 5 moves he thought Gahalu might make, and knew what he would do against any of them. He was merely giving Gahalu a break from the task of considering his own moves, and to allow the two of them to talk as he awaited the spirit man's play. "Toktu seems worried these days. More cares than an elder should have in good times, I think," Kairos commented. As scattered as his Dinku was, Kairos could tell by the elder's body language that there was something bothering him. "The tide. He says he wonders now if you're a spirit man or just a spirit. No man can hold back the tide. Maybe a spirit could." Gahalu answered Kairos' unspoken question. They both knew it was Kairos' magic that was the cause of concern. Tricks of fire and levitation were fun for the villagers. Being able to turn wood and stone into trinkets and toys seemed harmless. Stopping a sea storm that should have at least washed into the low-lying parts of the village was different. As benign and benevolent as it may have been, it bespoke a power that they had not realized their spirit man possessed. Hadku, the last spirit man, had blessed newborns and painted protective spells on the hunters who went into the jungles. It was nothing that could be seen working. It worked quietly, subtly. It was not the frightening power that spirit man Kairos had shown. He has just never heard of a man who could do it before. Now he has. "Everything is impossible until someone has done it," Kairos answered. It was a play on a Kadran saying, "Everything is possible, and someone has done it." It was an easier position to hold in a world with a vast history of magic that spanned back longer than anyone could remember. "Why did you do it?" Gahalu asked. "To break the saying, to see if you could manage it? The storm was not so bad. No one was in danger if we just waited inland until it passed. We could have rebuilt anything that was damaged or swept out to sea. We have done it before. More were in danger from this storm because they wanted to be close and watch." "Your hunters hunt the little boars that run around all over the island," Kairos said by way of reply. "Are they difficult to kill?" "Young hunters kill them all the time. They are only dangerous if you do not have a spear or do not know how to use it properly. They weigh half what even the youngest hunters do. You could probably kill one with no magic, spirit man. They taste wonderful, too. There are enough of them that you would hardly need to hunt anything else to feed the village, even if the fishermen's nets came back empty," Kairos added, and Gahalu nodded his agreement with the sentiment. "So why does Gaktu wear a necklace of panther teeth around his neck? Why does he tell anyone who will listen about the scars on his arm and how he got them?" "To prove he is a good hunter. He wants to be the first hunter when Fanu becomes an elder," Gahalu said. "And is he a good hunter? Should he be the first hunter after Fanu?" Kairos pressed. "I think so," Gahalu said, then nodded after considering for a moment. "I doubt he learned to be a good hunter by killing little boars," Kairos said. "He fought panthers and crocodiles, and whatever else he could find in the deep jungle. While I am no hunter, but I will not become a better spirit man by playing with cooking fires and lifting children in the air for their amusement. Kairos took his queen and captured the knight Gahalu had just moved. The board was thinning of pieces, since when Gahalu was pressed to make a move, he tried to capture anything he could.
So now you can stop the sea itself. What more do you need to prove? Gahalu asked.
He moved one of his bishops to point at Kairos's queen. No, try again. Kairos pushed Gahalu's bishop back to where it had come from. I could have taken it with my queen, and you did not have it protected. And it is not a matter of proving. It is a matter of practice and control. I have more I need to learn before I am ready.
Gahalu glared at his reprimanded bishop. Why are queens so strong in this game? I never heard any stories where a king is so weak and his queen is stronger than all his soldiers.
Kairos could not help but think about Iridan and Juliana. Not all kings are mighty warriors, and not all queens are delicate flowers. I admit, though, that it is probably less common that way.
Kairos managed to draw the game out a while longer. Gahalu needed practice more than a thrashing, and Kairos did not want to demoralize his friend. He really wanted to find someone who was a worthwhile opponent, rather than merely a student. But he knew that he would have to be on the island a long time before that would ever come to pass.
Kairos managed to find some time to himself that afternoon. He had learned to keep his clothing from being left behind when he turned himself incorporeal, and had slipped through the wall of his house and into the jungle when no one was watching. Eventually, they would grow curious and come looking for their spirit man. But for a while, Kairos had bought himself privacy and a bit of safety for any who might have been curious enough to spy on him. What he was dealing with were forces he understood poorly and was still struggling to control. There was a small stretch of beach well outside the normal Denku wanderings that Kairos had taken for his practice with the transference spell. It was on a small inlet, too rocky to make a good spot for putting fishing boats into the water. There were little tidal pools all along the water's edge, teeming with tiny sea animals, from barnacles to crabs. The tidal pools had been threatened by the storm's fury, as well as the Denku village, but Kairos's protection had not extended so far from where his hosts made their homes. The aquatic inhabitants had been violently displaced by the strong tides and massive waves, and even days later, things were only beginning to show signs of recovery. Kairos had spent part of the previous afternoon practicing a slight variant of the transference spell. He had used it to create tiny spheres only a handspan in width that he could create in one spot and make appear a few feet away. The variant was a bit more complex than the version he intended to use to travel home to Acardia, but far safer to practice, since he was not actually moving his own body when he did it. Kairos's next step was one that he considered crucial in his quest.
Doxlo, Intuve, Minep, Gahalixviu, Junumar, Tequalix, Ferendak, Uzganmani, Dekdardan, Besvatu Luo.
Kairos weaved his hands through an intricate set of gestures, envisioning it as a rune he was painting in the air with his fingers. He kept track of each line of the rune as he created it, each finger leaving its own trail of fire in its wake in Kairos's imagination, as he challenged his mind to keep the memory of the rune's path in proper order. A short way from where Kairos stood barefoot in the sand, a small scavenger crab walked by, oblivious to the adventure upon which it was about to embark. A shimmering sphere of opaque ether enveloped it without warning, along with a few good handfuls of the sand around it. Kairos felt the flow of ether quicken as he envisioned a spot a few paces down the beach as the sphere's destination, and then let the spell go. The sphere disappeared, leaving a perfectly smooth scoop taken out of the beach. At the intended destination, nothing. Kairos looked about and saw a shadow that did not belong. Ducking and glancing hurriedly upward, he saw the crab and a loose collection of sand plummeting down at him. Fortune smiled on the little scavenger crab as Kairos managed to quickly catch it with levitation and set it gently down on the beach near where it had begun its magical journey.
Well, that could have gone worse,
Still needs work, though. Kairos could easily forgive a bit of missed aim on his own journey, especially with his ward to protect him in the event of a fall, but he knew that he needed more practice. Never did he harass the same creature twice, but Kairos tried a dozen more times before finally being satisfied that he could reliably send a crab, sandpiper, or seagull to wherever location he wanted.
"That was wondrous!"
Tipu exclaimed, breaking Kairos free from his introspection as he considered the results of his final sandpiper relocation.
"Send me!"
The Dinku girl was squealing with excitement. Kairos's lesser magics had become accepted among the island's inhabitants, and even if it was still strange to them, the awe and wonder had lost their edge. This making of things disappear in one place and appear in another was enough to renew that sense that their spirit man was still beyond their understanding.
"What are you doing here? And no, it is too dangerous to send you."
Kairos tried to sound stern, but it was a tone he still thought sounded hollow coming from him.
"The bird is fine. I want to go,"
Tipu insisted.
"Now, before Kali finds us, I want to go first."
Kairos assumed that the two of them had split up to search for him, but did not want to sidetrack the conversation by asking for details on why the near inseparable pair had separated.
"You are too big. I need to try more times."
Kairos wished he had a better vocabulary in Dinku to better argue his point, but was consigned to battle with the armaments he had, and not those he wished for.
"I maybe hurt you."
"No." "You try again. Make it bigger this time and I watch,"
Tipu countered, undeterred. Kairos was glad that through days of complaining and pleas to have them repeat themselves, both Tipu and Kali had simplified their choices of words to the selection of Dinku that Kairos had learned. It helped that the two of them had been in no small part responsible for his learning the language.
"Fine, stay back and do not speak."
Kairos hoped that maybe seeing it a few more times, along with his likely setbacks, might assuage her interest in becoming an experimental passenger on the ill-fated magical ship Guess and Try that Kairos was currently captaining.
"Doxlo, Intuve, Menep, Gahalixview, Junumar, Tequalix, Ferendak, Uzganmani, Dekdardan, Besvatu Luo."
Kairos sought no passenger, but instead ripped a man-sized scoop of earth from the ground, not far from them. Hoping to put a bit of a scare into the girl, Kairos gave a rather large share of ether, even beyond what increasing the size of the sphere had required. He pictured in his mind not a spot a few paces distant along the beach, but a spot well out over the water, in front of him, such that Tipu's eyes would spot it, easily as she watched him and the opaque sphere he created.
Sploosh!
A great mass of sand and the packed earth well beneath it splashed noisily into the Katamic. Kairos turned to Tipu.
"Do you still want to try?"
Tipu frowned at Kairos.
"Try again,"
she insisted. Kairos repeated the spell, but this time there was a great crash in the foliage behind them as Kairos dumped the sand in the sparse jungle not far from the water's edge.
"Try again,"
Tipu said, unwilling to give up on her hope of trying the spell voyage herself. Kairos began to grow annoyed.
"Who does she think she is, anyway? Ordering me around like I am hers to command. She is not my wife, though she wishes she was. She is not an elder. Even Gahalu I would not allow to tell me what is right and wrong to do here on his island."
Kairos decided to rid himself of Tipu for a while. It was a small change. There was a part of the gesture for the spell that directed the location of the originating sphere. That was all that was needed.
"Doxlo, Intuve, Menep, Gahalixview, Junumar, Tequalix, Ferendak, Uzganmani, Degdardan, Vesvato Iho."
Kairos vanished. Tipu at first thought he was playing a joke on her, but she did not find him and then returned to the village greatly worried. In his place, there had briefly been a giant sphere of seawater, which immediately crashed to the ground, leaving a flooded pit with a handful of colorful and confused fish. The world of light disappeared in an instant. Kairos had seen the world of ether before, but it looked different, cut off not only from his coexistent vision of the light, but also from the shackles of his physical body. His view shifted with the faintest whim, disorienting him without a solid frame of reference to ground his vantage point. He could make out a rough mass of sources that he figured were the jungle trees, and one human that was probably Tipu. His own form stood immobile within a cage of ether, a hollowed husk with no source in it at all. He was cut adrift, source from body, and was venturing forth without the fleshy home his source had inhabited since long before he had been aware of it. Kairos perceived little motion among the sources he saw. Time was slowed to the point of nearly stopping. He tried to stop and watch some single source for a time to check his assumption that time was still passing, but his thoughts would not hold still enough for him to make such a painstaking observation. He flitted about like a hummingbird bereft of its innate navigator, his attention drawn to something only to find that he had sped to it as quickly as he could form the thought. A sudden chilling feeling pervaded Kairos' discorporate form. His movements began to slow. His vision started to grow hazy.
Ether. I must be using up what I had drawn.
Kairos called to the ether. It responded sluggishly, like an ocean of honey oozing toward him, grudgingly heeding his summons, where normally it snapped to his call as a gale wind. The syrupy ether invigorated him as he drank it in, more aware of its feel as he had no bodily distractions to dilute the experience.
I cannot stay in this form indefinitely. I need to find a place to reform and emerge into the world. Someplace Tipu will lose sight of me.
Kairos was a bit uncertain of the geography as related to the ether. It was not the same as seeing the ether overlaid upon the world of light, as he had grown so accustomed to seeing it. The ground was as permeable to ether as it was the air, or the sea for that matter. Air would have been fine had he not wished to hide upon his reemergence, but water suited his purpose better. Kairos watched until he saw what was either a flock of birds or a school of fish, and settled upon the latter being most likely. He moved to within their midst, and willed the ether sphere and the inert Kairos within to come to him. Once it had surrounded him, he released the magic. Kairos had but a fraction of a second to gulp air as the temporary pocket that came with him from the beach collapsed under the weight of the Katamic. He fought down the panic as the weight of the water crushed in on him suddenly, and was thankful for the protection of his tattooed ward that his ribs were not crushed as well. He was much farther below the water's surface than he had expected. Though not a strong swimmer, Kairos was still adept at silent telekinesis magic, and he used that to yank himself up to the surface. He gasped for air, and saw that he was staring out to sea. From behind him, he heard frantic shouting from the beach.
Wonderful. Kali found Tipu and they both just noticed me.
Kairos began a slow, resigned swim to shore.
I hear your training went poorly today, Toktu commented, taking a bite from a spit of boar and passing it on to the next reveler. It was the evening of the equinox, which was one of the many days the Denku took for feasting. All along the beach, festive fires were lit, and the islanders danced, sang, and shared both tales and drink. I need more practice. I will do better, Kairos responded. He sat not far from the elder, who was widowed and had no wives to attend him with the fawning attention Kairos studiously ignored from Tipu and Kali.
I am told that Tipu asked you to use your magic on her, Nakna added.
She was another of the elders, as well as Tipu and Kali's common grandmother. She looked much like Kairos would have imagined either of them to look had they been left for long years in the sun to dry. She was darker skinned, but it had a grayish cast to it. It did not shine or glisten as Kairos's companions did, and her curves had receded to sharp angles covered by sagging skin. Her head she kept clean shaven in perpetual mourning for her long dead husband.
I thank you for showing wisdom by telling her no, she said.
Thank you. Kairos nudged the inattentive Tipu, who was curled at Kairos's side, eating a hollowed mango that had recently been filled with liquor. Do you hear your grandmother? Listen to her when you would not listen to me next time.
Kairos paused a moment, uncertain whether that came out quite right. The point seemed lost on Tipu anyway, who looked up long enough to nod in the way that children learn when they are required to agree with their elders, insincerely, but with feigned deference.
How much longer do you think until you are ready? Gahalu asked.
It was a question that hung in many minds, but the Denku struggled to bring themselves to broach the subject with Kairos. It seemed such an impolite question from all angles. By asking it, they admitted that they were pondering his departure, which made them seem poor hosts. By telling him they wished him to stay, they imposed upon him selfishly. Mostly, it seemed, they just wished that Kairos would change his mind after a time and decide not to go at all.
You got your magic to work, at least a little, Gahalu said.
Not long. I was not ready for a long go,
the best word Kairos could think of for journey.
A little more practice.
A plan to find home and I go, Kairos nodded.
I mean to come back, he stated, once I find the one I left. I want to bring her here. This is a good place, good home.
Did you tell them that?
Asked Kapi, another of the elders, nodding toward Tipu and Kali.
Each night when I came here,
more times than I counted, I stopped. They do not listen, Kairos explained. But they were listening. Kairos had felt them tense when he mentioned the girl he had left back home. Abelay was a sore subject with them. Kairos had explained about her when he first arrived, that she was the one he wished to be with, and that he longed to go home to see her. They had insisted that he was better off with them, making every effort to supplant this mystery foreigner in Kairos's heart. The feast lasted long into the night. The Denku were experts at merriment and hard drinkers for the most part. Kairos had learned his lessons and managed to drink little, despite vessels of various sweet-smelling drinks being passed to him. His head was clear as he made his way to the secluded stone house that was his home for whatever little time he would remain among the Denku. With his success on the beach, he was confident that his time in paradise was nearly at an end, at least until he could return with Abelay. In his footsteps followed a rather less sober Tipu and Kali, who leaned on one another for support. He could not follow their slurred, hushed conversation in a language he only somewhat knew, but he could tell they were not happy with him. He ignored them as best he could as he entered the house.
You cannot leave, Kali said deliberately, in the manner of a drunk who realized she is drunk and wished to make herself understood to someone less so.
I told you too many times, Kairos began, and Tipu put a hand over his mouth.
She is not finished saying, Tipu stated, nodding to her cousin to continue.
Yeah, no, you cannot leave. I am carrying your baby, Kali finished, nodding for emphasis and awaiting Kairos's reaction.
Kairos looked hard at the younger girl. She was perhaps 2 years his junior, yet seemed such a child at times. She was desperate to keep Kairos, no matter the cost. He could see the tears welling behind an indignant mask, accusing Kairos of paternity to leash him to her side. She was hoping, no doubt, to put truth to it before he saw through her ruse. But it was the seeing that was her problem.
Kali, you cannot lie to me. My eyes, Kairos pointed to them, are spirit man's eyes. I see life. If you had a baby, even a tiny one growing in you, I would see it.
No, it is very new, and you will, Kali began,
but Kairos cut her off with a gesture. It was not a conversation he ever expected or hoped to have. He wished it were Brannis in his place.
How would Brannis handle this? He would never have let it carry on this far. He managed to refuse Juliana in his bed and send her back to her own, and he loves her more than anyone. I let two girls who were little more than strangers to me share my bed,
and constantly scheme to seduce me. Brannis would either have sent them away immediately or shared an evening or two with them and let some other lucky girls have their chance, I would wager. He would be envied by the hunters and the other Dinku men and gossiped over by half the women. But he would never have let himself become the pet of two little wisps of girls who act like spoiled children.
Kairos had paused long enough that Kali was about to begin speaking again.
Go, he finally spoke, and pointed out the door of his house. His tone left no ambiguity about his meaning.
Tipu crouched down next to Kairos, tried to curl up to him to avoid being lumped together with Kali, but it was for naught.
You too, go.
As the two sullen girls departed his house with tears in their eyes, Kairos knew he had finally done the right thing with them. He cast a shielding spell over the open doorway and threw his sleeping mat up into the bed where it belonged. Kairos knew that the old familiar method of Akkadian sleeping would avail him little. It was to be an awkward night's sleep. Being in the right would not assuage his conscience from the hurt he had given Tipu and Kali. It was his own fault for allowing them to become so attached. He also knew that it was the first day of springtime in Kadrin, and Brannis was set to have a lousy day as well.